This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Oklahoma 3rd District Representative Frank Lucas. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Congressman Frank Lucas next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Tariffs, downsizing government, and budget spending are all top issues in Washington. Oklahoma Congressman Frank Lucas says the nation's debt has taken new significance following the COVID pandemic, global military conflicts, and certainly a negative ag trade balance. Lucas says the budget battle ahead will be the wildest political rodeo voters have ever seen.
And think of in budget reconciliation, think of these as not the maximum amount you can save, but think of it as the minimum you can cut or save. So the Senate says at least several hundred billion. In the House, we say at least several trillion. And from there, it will ultimately be worked out. Each committee will have responsibilities. Ag and transportation. I mean, each committee will have responsibilities, and we'll work through that over the coming months to get to a final product in each house and work out the differences between the two bodies and go from there. You remember the old line about the Chancellor of Germany in the 1870s who said watching laws be made was a lot like watching a sausage be ground. Well, we're going to do some grinding, and it's going to take some stuffing, but we got to get to the point where we can fund the things like defense and agriculture and infrastructure and tax relief that we need in order to keep this country on the right track.
So the headlines in the nation have been a lot about DOGE. And the question is, are we cutting essential services to fund tax breaks?
Well, first, I believe it's important that every process, public or private, every once in a while you need to look and see how the money's being spent. What's being spent well? What could be spent better? What shouldn't be spent at all? And most companies of any size will bring in these so-called efficiency consultants, and they make recommendations. Think of DOGE as that. Now, here's my caution, though, Jeff. There's a difference between an efficiency consulting firm coming in and looking at your farm or the bank down the street or a manufacturing company somewhere on the East and West Coast. Typically, they understand the subject matter incredibly well, and the recommendations they make should probably be followed. DOGE is a very bright group of people under a very capable fellow by the name of Elon Musk. The problem is there's a lot of things going on in the federal government, and that group can't possibly have expertise in every subject matter. So when they make recommendations, if they're sound and solid, absolutely I'm going to be supportive. But if they don't understand what ARS research scientists do, if they don't understand things like predator control people at USDA or a variety of other programs, then I and my colleagues will do what we've been doing now for some weeks, which is push back and say, no, this is necessary, or you don't understand that, or maybe we shouldn't do this. So far, we've had success in getting their attention, educating them. But DOGE, the principle of looking at everything that's going on, there's nothing wrong with that. But we don't want to make bad mistakes. And that's why I and my colleagues are keeping such a close eye on Elon and his bunch.
So the chair of the Ag Committee and our ranking member both have raised some questions about the most recent offer about retirement, especially of a brain drain at the Department of Agriculture. Is there a chance we've gone too far with some of these?
Jeff, here's the thing you have to remember. In the way that that proposal was put together, they offered early retirement to the most senior members. those tend to be, whether it's USDA or any other enterprise in the world, those tend to be the most experienced, seasoned, knowledgeable people, and typically folks who would probably be retiring in 3, 4, 5, 6 months anyway. So you take out the experience. Then this concept of, well, anybody that hasn't been on at work on payroll for at least a year, maybe we should just run them off. Those are the worker bees. Who fills out the paperwork? Who goes to the field? Who does the grunt work? It's the new folks. So when my ranking member and my chairman say, yeah, maybe this is not the right way to do it everywhere, they've got a valid point. Because like USDA, there are services and programs, benefits that have to be delivered. You've got to have someone who understands the programs. Those are the experienced people who understand how to implement them. Those are the experienced people. But you've got to have somebody, whether they're reading the forms we mail in by email or fax in, I guess fax is still a word we use, right? Or we come in and fill out. There's got to be folks to actually do the paperwork. So, again, we've spent time explaining that, you know, like this $10 billion that Chairman Thompson negotiated to help tide us over in this one-year extension of the Farm Bill, that money needs to go out quickly. And by the way, they're trying to get it out, but you got to have people to do the program. So once again, efficiency I'm in favor of, but it's got to be efficiency, not just cuts for the sake of cuts.
You are chair of a subcommittee of financial services on monetary policy and treasury. How does your subcommittee weigh in on the financial position of the country now and the consequences of action or the consequences of taking no action?
Well, ironically, the subcommittee that Chairman Hill on the Financial Services Committee, Republican Little Rock, put together and made me chairman of, our focus is on the Federal Reserve System. How is the central bank functioning? How should they function? And basically starting with the Act in 1913 and coming forward. We're also responsible for Treasury markets. That means when the United States Treasury has to sell Treasury bonds or bills or notes, how do they sell those into the market? How do they sell them to banks and individuals, to institutional investors, pension funds, that kind of stuff? Do we have the capacity to not only issue new debt, will people buy the stuff, but how do we process that turnover of the $35 trillion plus dollars we already have? I would suggest to you, from my experiences so far on the task force, in a general sense, there's some things like at the Federal Reserve System, under Dodd-Frank and various Democrat administrations, they've taken them from being an institution that's focused on price stability, how much money's available, how do you make sure interest rates stay in a certain zone, not unreasonable, but yet enough to encourage people to save, how do you keep that in the zone without the stuff that the other side's put on where they want the Federal Reserve System to be a regulator to enforce social and custom and environmental and economic policy. Central bankers should not be telling banks how to make their loans based on weather patterns or social culture or all that sort of stuff. So we're looking at how do you undo, potentially, parts of Dodd-Frank and, for instance, what the Biden administration directed. On the Treasury market side, as we've seen with the bond markets and stock markets gyrating in recent days, we have to be able to sell and service our debt. Because those Treasury bonds and notes and bills are not just how you finance the government. It is an investment that pension funds, it is an investment that banks use to hold their reserves in. It's where corporations and individuals who are big operators park their spare money. You got to have a fluid market there, because if you have a fluid, transparent market, then interest rates will be cheaper because people are comfortable in the safety of those instruments, and they know they can have liquidity. Always turn around and sell them without any problem. So we're going to try to, in recent years, again, going back to Dodd-Frank, the number of so-called prime market makers, big entities that have promised to buy treasuries and then resell them whenever the treasury sells them, there's only half of those that used to be. And now we're selling 7-8 times as much paper, borrowing 7-8 times as much money. We got to make sure we don't clog up the system, because that could set off a chain reaction. Well, you know, Jeff, I represent the northwest half of the great state of Oklahoma, and you've seen the picture on my wall of a shack in my home county from the Great Depression, the mistakes made in the 20s and 30s, policy-wise, at USDA and at the Federal Reserve and at Congress, brought untold misery on my predecessors in Oklahoma. I'm not going to be a part of letting anything like that happen again to the future or present people.
How long can the government run without raising the debt ceiling?
They do what they call extraordinary measures. They stop selling new bonds and bills, and they start moving money around in various trust funds and pension funds. Sometime this summer we'll come up on that. A lot of times the exact number is hard to pick because the Treasury is collecting revenue every day from taxes and revenues and import fees and just a riot and all sorts of things. And the expenditures we make vary season by season. But I would tell you sometime early in the summer or late in the summer, that has to be addressed. Now, ultimately, we got to get a grip on our fiscal house so we're not borrowing more money. But right now, I've got a 4-seat Republican majority in the House, a 3-seat Republican majority in the Senate, and it takes 60 senators to agree to do anything on money bills. And I've got a president who's engaged in an all-out effort to rebalance the world trade. And it's just a challenge to legislate.
Let's drift toward farm policy if we can. Initially, the Senate said we'll save $1 billion out of ag, and the House said we'll save $230 billion out of ag. It's hard to add to a farm bill that's price tag keeps going up when you're talking about cutting money. Where do you think this most recent vote and the discussion to come, what do you think's going to be available for a farm bill?
The way the budget resolution, the budget process sets up reconciliation, each committee is responsible for its own spending and its own savings or its own justification. I don't know where we come up on the final goal. I don't believe that there's $230 billion to be saved, to be perfectly honest. It's a target. But I would tell you there's more than a billion there. Remember, with time, probably 80% on average, that's just a broad average number, of the money gets spent on the social nutrition programs. That's one of the places that we have to look really closely, because those programs are administered on a state level, typically, and making sure that California's doing a good job and New York's doing a good job. I have faith in my friends in Oklahoma, but making sure that everybody's following the rules. And we set the overall standard, since we as the United States government and our taxpayers pay the bill, making sure that able-bodied people are earning those things, making sure that it's not permanent assistance, making sure that folks are not gaming the system by playing more than one constituency or another. We can come up with legitimate savings that will not, in my opinion, deny one calorie from the plate of someone that needs it, because I'm not going to let hungry people starve. But by the same token, I want to make sure the resources go where they need to. We don't need to be paying for things that aren't on target. That said, along with the savings, everyone out in farm country knows that we're going to have to spend some more money on this farm bill, on the commodity title. The reference prices set in 2018, before COVID, before the trade wars, before superinflation, before wars in Europe, nothing is the same price it was in 2018. They have to be adjusted to reflect that. And you and I both know, Jeff, and we've discussed this before, I plowed the same wheat field in western Oklahoma since 1977 every year. The weather patterns in the last 5 years have been tough. Just ask somebody from North Carolina all the way across to Louisiana. They've been tough. And the drought issues we've dealt in my area, we've got to tweak on crop insurance so that, because that, along with price protection, is the big safety net. We've got to tweak on crop insurance so that when you pay a premium, you can afford to pay the premium. And if you have a weather event, you're going to be able to actually receive some help. That takes money. But we'll work through that. We always have. We will. I always tell folks back home, the thing about the Congress anymore is it's become more and more kind of, well, like this. We get things done, and sometimes we have to do it the hardest possible way in the longest possible fashion before we get there. But we'll get there.
Congressman, there was discussion, as I understand, between the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman, and the chairman of the House Ag Committee, Glenn G.T. Thompson, about moving Title I farm bill into budget reconciliation. I haven't heard the outcome of that meeting or whether it gained any traction anywhere else on Capitol Hill.
Well, I'm not in a position really to address that, but I will say this, Jeff. Budget reconciliation is the one big piece of legislation that requires only a simple majority vote in the House and Senate to pass once you put the final document together. It is a bill that, depending on the definition of the Senate parliamentarian, amazing things can happen. You and I both remember in 1996, after the Ag Committee could not pass the second-generation farm bill, commonly referred to as Freedom to Farm, twice out of the committee, lost twice in the committee, never passed out of any committee in the Senate. Ultimately, the entire 1996 farm bill wound up in budget reconciliation that fall. Now, we've had so many turnovers here, and there's so many junior members who can't even tell you how we did the 14 farm bill. But where there is a will, there is a way. We need a new comprehensive farm bill. We need to address all the things that have happened, whether it's freestanding or pieces and parts in the reconciliation, the title, the commodity titles, crop insurance, or it's the whole bill. I'm here to get something done, and I think we have opportunities. It's just going to be hard, but we can get it done. You remember the 14 farm bill. It took me 2.5 years working with my friends, but we got the entire third generation rewrite of policy, which is still the policy, done. It's just harder these days.
It appears to me that if the ag committees had the money, we'd already had a farm bill. The dollars are still the issue of putting all this together. So if the tariff situation, which we'll start discussing in a moment, if the tariff situation brings hardship on agriculture, will there be funds that USDA through CCC can actually help farmers this time, or are they going to be constrained financially with assistance?
Let me word it this way. President Trump is a man of action. And you remember in his first term, we went through a series of trade wars, primarily focused on the Chinese at the time. And when our exporting producers, think of everything from hogs to soybeans to cotton to wheat, and that's just a few of the commodities that are exported into the world market, just a few, when we were under tremendous pressure, the president was supportive of putting additional money in the farm bill that existed at the time to help us. And at the conclusion of those negotiations with the Chinese, he got them to agree to buy $50 billion more dollars of U.S. ag products. Now, I don't know, I can't tell you off the top of my head how successful or even if the Biden people enforced that, but he did negotiate an extra market for us and helped us. President Trump is one of these people who remembers the folks who was with him. And rural America has been with him every time. And he means to reset the trade balance in the world. And I agree with him. We've been at a disadvantage as a whole. But I think he also will be with the folks out on the farm. He won't let us suffer for what will ultimately be in our best interest. He will be with us. So I'm counting on that being a part of the equation this summer, too.
So the situation that I would ask you then is if this tariff situation comes to a point where dollars have to be allocated for farmers to support their incomes in the short run, will that ultimately limit our opportunity or chance to get a new farm bill or an adequate farm bill that covers both the needs of farmers and nutrition?
I would like to think that it would give us a window of opportunity to complete the entire package and put the resources into such a farm bill. Remember, Jeff, we don't have to reinvent the farm bill this time. All we have to do is turn the knobs to reflect where resources go and how the plant programs work based on the 14 language, which was improved in the 18 bill. There'll be some tweaks on the language, but put those resources in. If you give me some dollars, it doesn't take long to adjust the reference prices. If you give me some dollars, it doesn't take long to tweak crop insurance so that it still becomes an effective program again. I just need some dollars, and it would be easier, in my opinion, to move those dollars through a complete five-year farm bill than to go the route of another $10 billion bonus or $10 billion of emergency money, might be the better way to put it, as we did in December of last year.
Do you think a new farm bill, if we can bring it to pass, would include language that would address Prop 12 and Decision 3 in Massachusetts?
Those are two of the hottest topics being discussed in the committee dais and in the hallways and when we were on the floor together. I don't have you a good answer for that, but I know that it is an issue that is going critical mass, and if we don't respond in a productive way, we may harm the national agricultural capacity for a long time to come.
Just before COVID, then Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack put more money into the SNAP program so more people could be served because we were in a financial crisis. But now the question is, after COVID is over, do we continue to support nutrition at that level? Is that not the core of the debate over nutrition in a new bill?
That is a major component. Remember, the administration at the time made a decision that many of us thought was arbitrary in what they did. That will be reviewed. It's just another part of the complicated puzzle.
I thank you for your patience in addressing all these simple questions. Now let's move to another one and talk tariffs.
Yes.
I understand that the U.S. policy over a period of years was to help developing nations by giving them better access to our market, with a view that someday that we would correct those positions and balance them up. Is that where we are now?
I think President Trump understands that China is not a developing country. He would acknowledge to you that India is not a developing country, that they have chosen an economic model that they prefer to operate by. They're kind of mercantilist in nature. The president means to rebalance world trade and put us back what he believes in a more equitable fashion, as things have kind of slipped away by policy, intentional or unintentional, the last 30 or 40 years. It is a painful process. But I also would acknowledge to you, Jeff, 3rd District of Oklahoma and all members of Congress represent their constituencies. What, 80%+ of all cotton is shipped out of the country? Maybe 85% of the cotton we raise in Oklahoma plus winds up in that pattern. 40% of the wheat we raise is exported. Virtually every hog that is produced in northwest Oklahoma goes to Asia. By the way, they're all paying cash for those things, and I like that cash. So it matters to me, and it matters to my folks. I just have to believe that the president is kind of like a horse trader or a prize fighter. He's swinging, he's punching, he's pulling his back, he's moving forward, he's negotiating, just as we've seen this now 90-day suspension of essentially most of his tariffs against everybody but mainland China. He's maneuvering. He's wheeling. He's dealing. Let's give him some time to negotiate, and let's give him some time to flesh things out. And as far as mainland China, that's the toughest bunch of trade partners we've ever had. Ask anybody who is involved in cotton marketing, wheat marketing, pork marketing, any ag sector, they will tell you they're the toughest, meanest bunch of folks to do business with. And sometimes, you know, you gotta push back on the bully. You can't let them just huff and puff and prevail.
The president has taken on the world with the tariff situation, and there is a midterm election coming up. A lot of pain inflicted here in the short run with a hope of a long-term goal. Is there time to do this?
I believe that if the president will help make sure that we have the resources to get our people through this tough time, the potential there to accomplish great things is real. But I can't second-guess the mind of Donald Trump. He wheels and deals and maneuvers in a fashion that's all his own, and we just have to keep the faith and see where we go.
Frank Lucas, one last thought here for you. It's open mic, and we give you the last word today.
Quite simply, we've come through a challenging period of time, and we face challenges ahead. We don't have to reinvent the farm belt. We just need to come up with the resources to make it function more efficiently. And we need to encourage all my colleagues in Congress that, like farming, this business of just looking 5 minutes or 5 hours or 5 days ahead is not in the best interest of the nation. We've got to think in the long term, like any good farmer or rancher does.
Our thanks to Oklahoma 3rd District Representative Frank Lucas, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.